Welcome to the April 2024 edition of the Arrows on the Highways podcast. We're excited to have you listening with Arrows on the Highways editor Robert Steve. I'm Steve Goldstein. This is our fourth episode. If you love Arrows on the Highways magazine and great storytelling, please listen to our previous podcast episodes. They're easy to find. Just go to Spotify and Apple Podcasts and search Arrows on the Highways. You can also Google Arrows on the Highways podcast and you'll be able to click a link. This edition of the podcast features the incredible Chiricahua National Monument, which marks its 100th anniversary this month. Our special guest will be Suzanne Moody, a longtime Chiricahua Park Ranger. But as always, we kick off this episode with Arizona Highways Magazine Editor-in-Chief Robert Steve and his editor's letter. And I always gush, Robert, with you. This is a wonderful way to begin your editor's letter by painting this picture of your family trip from Wisconsin to Yellowstone when you were a little boy. Why did that work for you as an example, as a way to introduce the Chiricahua discussion?
Well, to be honest with you, it just sort of comes out. I don't sit there and, you know, put together an outline, but I was thinking about, you know, what people go through to get to a place like Yellowstone or Chiricahua or the Grand Canyon. And, you know, for my family, it wasn't like the Donner Party, you know, heading west, but, you know, we were compromised, you know, as I write in my column, my brother and I were, you know, sequestered in the back of a camper with no windows to speak of. And so it was a long, dark ride, but man, once we got to Yellowstone, it was, you know, the veil was lifted and it was just this remarkable experience that stays with me. And for me, I guess it was an anecdote about, you know, the joy of discovery and finding a national park.
Your connection to nature is something I find very cool, because when I first met you, you were the editor of another magazine, and I would not have guessed based on, I don't know, just it wasn't your personality, just the way you carried yourself. This is not a guy who's going to get grubby in the, but that seems like what you love to do and you have since you were a kid.
Oh, for sure. This goes to the heart of, I think, who I am. And I've said this many, many times, you know, I'm very privileged to be the editor of a magazine where the mission statement is showcase all the beauty of this beautiful state. So it's definitely a great opportunity.
Okay, so as you mentioned in your editor's letter, 99 years ago, Arizona Highways Magazine did its first story about Chiricahua, and you include some bits from that story, including this phrasing, which I love. What is there to see there? The answer is the greatest work of nature upon rock formations up to this time registered in the knowledge of man. And that sounds a little hyperbolic, but also fascinating. So, and that's one of the great things I love when you do this, you delve into these past issues. What do you think must it have been like for someone from the Midwest or the East to read about Chiricahua back in those days?
Well, yeah, I mean, as you say, there was some hyperbole there, I guess, and it might have been perceived as that. But, you know, once you've seen the park, you're sort of like, oh, it does live up to that. But, you know, the wording of that, it was, and you did such a great job of reading it, because even when I was just writing it out, it was sort of a, you know, flowery language, and it was sort of hard to, you know, get it to spill out on the page. So the fact that you did it in front of a microphone is pretty impressive. But, you know, there was a lot of criticism that Arizona was, you know, nothing but sand and scorpions and snakes, some of the same stereotypes we wrestle with today. And that particular writer was making a point that, you know, in addition to the things people already know about, like the Grand Canyon and Monument Valley and Sedona, you know, we have this place called Chiricahua National Monument.
Yeah. At the heart of your editor's letter, so much fun. Some of the names of the rock formations, the hoodoos, like Andy Gump, Judge Rumhauser, my personal favorite, Old Lady Sniff-Sniff. Those names are no longer used, but what did you find out about where those names came from?
Well, I will tell you, it was, and Suzanne, who we'll talk to here in a minute, you know, I'd sent her those names, those lists of those names, because I've been to the park so many times and none of them were familiar. I mean, one or two were familiar to me, and she couldn't imagine where I came up with that. And I said, well, it was actually in Arizona Highways, and these names were so unusual that, you know, it sent me down a rabbit hole. And I saw Judge Rumhauser and I thought, well, maybe he was some old West, you know, judge from Tombstone, you know, back in the days of the Wyatt Earp and the gang down there or something. And, you know, and you go down this rabbit hole, and this is the great thing about the internet. It turned out Judge Rumhauser wasn't even a real person. He was a character in a cartoon, a comic strip, and, you know, syndicated. It was a Hearst, you know, publication comic strip. And I learned a lot about that. And then I started digging deeper into the guy who created that comic strip. And, you know, it turns out he was this, yes, I hate to use the word Renaissance man, but the guy did a lot. And, you know, he made these great comic strips that were so popular. And then he moved to New York and became a boxing writer and ended up in the Boxing Hall of Fame. But he's best known probably for coining some very familiar American slang terms like, you know, the cat's meow and dumbbell and a couple of others. So, that's... You know, again, I sort of pinch myself. It's, you know, I'm sitting here on a Tuesday afternoon or whatever it might have been, and I'm learning about all these things, and it's all because I'm doing a story about the Chiricahuas.
And finally, Robert, any of the wild names still exist?
There are a couple of them, but, you know, when I asked Suzanne about it, I mean, most of them weren't gone. And I think there's a distinction of when they were named, right? Because early on, I think some of the early pioneers may have come up with their own names because they were reading the newspaper and enjoying those comics. But then later when the Civilian Conservation Corps moved in and others, I think then they renamed a lot of them. And there's a couple that are still around that you know, managed to survive. But, you know, when you see these rock formations, regardless of what they are called, they do have unusual shapes, you know, and it's like lying on your back in a meadow, looking up at the sky and looking at the clouds and sort of finding different shapes in those cumulus clouds. And you can do that same thing, but here it's rock.
Mm. That is Arizona Highways Magazine's Editor-in-Chief Robert Steve, and I'm Steve Goldstein. Up next, we'll talk to a longtime park ranger from the Chiricahua National Monument as the monument turns 100 this month. This is the Arizona Highways Podcast. It's the Arizona Highways Podcast with Robert Steve. I'm Steve Goldstein. With the Chiricahua National Monument marking 100 years this month, we're joined by someone who's been there for about 25% of that, Park Ranger Interpretation, Suzanne Moody. Suzanne, thanks for joining us on the Arizona Highways Podcast.
Thanks so much for inviting me. It's exciting to be here.
Obviously, we're going to spend a lot of time talking about Chiricahua, as we should, but I'm really curious. As I said, you've been there for around a quarter century, I guess, and so I want to know how you got there and what has kept you there.
Of course. Sometimes I wonder how quickly the time has passed. I've been here for, this is actually year 29. I accepted the job in the first place because it was my first permanent position with the National Park Service. I had been a seasonal ranger for about 3 years, working back-to-back seasons in parks across the West. So I was ready to settle down. And I've gotten really spoiled here because visitors arrive already knowing and loving the place, or they stumble into it and they're completely amazed that all Southern Arizona is not sand and cactus in 120 degrees like Phoenix can be.
You talk about people sort of coming already prepared, and I'm not sure of the exact number, but I know that Chiricahua is one of the least visited national monuments in our state. And I'm always amazed by that because, you know, once you've set foot there, you say to yourself, this is the most beautiful place. Does it strike you as unusual that it's such a low visited park?
Yes and no. Yes, because we're definitely not on the way to anywhere else, like the Grand Canyon, perhaps, although there's the Wild West of Tombstone close by. Seems like this southeast corner of Arizona is the forgotten area of Arizona sometimes, because oftentimes Phoenix and Tucson people go north to Flagstaff. People across the country, you know, being 40 miles off the Interstate 10, if you're willing to have the time and take the risk, and with a name like Chiricahua National Monument, some people show up expecting to find just a statue or a plaque or that kind of monument.
Suzanne, let me jump on what Robert was saying there. I've heard some, in fact, it was in one of the articles in this current issue of Arizona Highways Magazine, that some consider Chiricahua to be a hidden treasure. Sort of, again, piggybacking what Robert had to say about the number of people that come there, is it fair to call it a hidden treasure? And would you describe it that way yourself, having been there for 29 years?
Oh, definitely. Without a doubt. People, once they enter the mouth of Bonita Canyon and start driving up the 8 mile scenic road, all of a sudden you're in, have changed from the grasslands to the oak and pine forests, and they're not expecting that. And then you come around the last corner, and all of a sudden you're overlooking this wonderland of rocks, these amazing stone spires. And this place oftentimes really draws people into it. And in fact, some people even seem to have a spiritual kind of connection to this place.
The magazine has been covering your neck of the woods for many years. In fact, our first story about Chiricahua was in September of 1925. So you were just about 1 year old when we started covering the park. And it's
Robin, you mean the monument, not Suzanne, was 1 year
that's correct.
old.
Yes. And it's fascinating reading some of the old, stories about this place. And even then it was, billed as this extremely rare discovery, which of course it had been there for, forever. And the Apaches had called it home for a very long time, long before, there was a park there. But we had this piece in 1925, and I just wanted to read you something that was in there, and it was talking about sort of the early discovery of the monument and the rocks there. And the story goes, John Hand, a miner, while looking the country over in 1892, explored the Pinnacles while he was located as mine nearby, now the famous Hilltop Mine. And from that time on, nothing much is known of the explorations into this remarkable territory. But in 1911, Hand accompanied a Mr. and Mrs. Welch into the Pinnacles, and they left a paper with their names and date. And the paper was placed in a salmon tin, and a monument of rocks was erected as its home until such time in later years that someone would discover it. The monument was erected at what is now called Inspiration Point. At the time, the party felt sure that someday this would be a mecca for sightseers, and the tangible evidence was left so that in years later there would be proof of their visit. So my question is, was there ever a salmon tin discovered with those names in it, or is there some other, history that you can talk about that goes way back to the beginning?
I wish we would have somebody would have found that salmon tin. That would have been an amazing piece of history to have. To my knowledge, that has never happened. It was Ed Riggs, one of the local ranchers and one of the grandson of the one of the big families who settled here in this part of Cochise County back in the late 1800s, that also did some exploring of the canyons. And it was his photographs that he put together on a display that he brought to the 1922 Cochise County Fair in Douglas that drew more public attention. And eventually, Governor Hunt came to stay at Faraway Ranch, which was being operated as a guest ranch at the mouth of Bonita Canyon. And that started the ball rolling to get the protection from President Calvin Coolidge, to who established the national monument here to protect those amazing balanced rocks and pinnacles. Although today we know there's a lot more here to get excited about besides the amazing geology.
Suzanne, this is where the layperson comes in here. Obviously, Robert is very experienced in travels all across Arizona, and you've been the park ranger for and worked at the Chiricahua for 29 years. So, but I think I'm speaking for some people who just want to have a good time with how things are pronounced or the words. What's a hoodoo? Why do we have to call it a hoodoo?
Well, funny you should ask that, because I thought for a long time that was just a made-up word. But it is a true geologic term that means rock pinnacle. You could definitely describe the balanced rocks and pinnacles here at Chiricahua as hoodoos. That term has never caught on here like it has up at Bryce Canyon National Park in Utah, where they definitely talk about the hoodoos.
And those hoodoos have some interesting names, and you and I traded an email as we were working on this issue, and I referenced some old names, and you seemed a little surprised by them because none of those formations exist anymore. And I'm kind of curious. I know that a lot of the names that we're familiar with today were named by the workers of the Civilian Conservation Corps in the 1930s, but I guess some of those older names that are now defunct were named by the Erickson family, and some of those early settlers.
Yes, that's true. In fact, in the 1930s, not only were the Civilian Conservation Corps active, but the Works Progress Administration, which was were people more writers and artists. And if you ever get a chance to find a copy of their Arizona State Guide, there's a wonderful chapter in about Chiricahua National Monument that lists even more amazing names for the rock formations that sometimes, maybe today, we would not consider those names to be so-called politically correct. Sometimes with the growth of the forest, I think other rock formations are hidden. And there was even one like Sheep Rock, who lost its legs in the 1950s. So I think it's perhaps a good thing that the National Park Service decided not to continuing naming rock formations, because this place wouldn't have the same feel if you were met with signs all the time. So it's more fun to let visitors have their imagination fly and come up with their own names for some of these formations.
Suzanne, how did you react when Robert got in touch and asked you about things like Old Lady Sniff Sniff and Andy Gump? Were you just like, who is this guy? Is he playing an April Fool's joke early on me?
Well, it was in Arizona highways, so it had to be true, right?
Absolutely.
It made me laugh. And of course, I had to share that article with all my coworkers, who were also amazed at some of those names.
So the park was designated a national monument in 1924, but it took 10 years to actually have a grand opening celebration at the park. Can you talk a little bit about the, because you couldn't imagine that happening today, right? But things were different then.
This is true, yes. For one thing, there were not any visitor or staff facilities here in Bonita Canyon. At the entrance, you still had the Erickson family-owned Faraway Ranch, and it was daughter Lillian and her husband Ed Riggs who did so much as well to promote the establishment of Chiricahua National Monument. The monument today was actually carved out of the surrounding Coronado National Forest. As starters, so the area was still protected, and it was the Forest Service people who started the initial development as far as letting contracts to build today's scenic drive that heads up Bonita Canyon.
You know, you talked about the fact that there's so much more to do than just look at the geology. And I know that hiking is one of the great recreational opportunities there in the monument. And I think it's been almost 10 years now since the Horseshoe Two fire wreaked so much havoc in southeastern Arizona. I'm curious to know how things are looking in the decades since that fire.
Definitely, that fire has changed the landscape more than any other natural event has. And it's amazing. We've discovered that oak trees sprout like crazy and pine trees not so much. We've been lucky that places like Echo Park or Sugarloaf Mountain that were burned have re come back, but we're also fighting the effects of the years of drought, which could be anywhere from 5 to 15 years, depending on who you're talking to. So, will the mountain range and monument area ever be like it was before? Possibly not, but it's still an amazing place to see some of the impacts that natural processes like that Horseshoe Two fire have left behind.
Have over the course of nearly 3 decades, have you ever taken for granted there, or do you still have sort of aha moments all the time?
That's a really good question, and I try really hard not to take it for granted because it's my home as well. I'm one of the lucky ones who rents a house from the government in the monument. But when it never fails, no matter how many times I drive up to Masai Point, once I come around the very end at that last point of the scenic drive, and you're overlooking not only Bonita and Rhyolite Canyons with the rock formations, but out across the Sulphur Springs Valley to the Dragoon Mountains beyond, and even the Rincon Mountains on the east side of Tucson. There's something about it that just resets my internal fuses and makes all the so-called daily strife in the office not matter anymore. And I think that's what's really important about National Park Service places anywhere across the United States. We as a people need those opportunities to get back to nature. and where technology is not the primary focus, even in the 21st century.
And when you talk about nature, you know, some of that involves wildlife, and the monument is sort of down in that borderlands area. And I know there's some very interesting wildlife in the park. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. One of the most unusual animals that lives here in the monument is the white-nosed coati, or you might be more common with the name Coatimundi, a member of the raccoon family. That's one of the changes I've seen in the years that I've worked here, because when I first started, you hardly ever saw any coatis, or to see one was a very exciting occasion. And I feel like the last couple of years, even though I have no scientific proof, we're in a population boom because there's more of them and visitors get to see them more often. So it's definitely not an everyday thing that you get to see the coatis, but they are active during the day, and it's, you never know when it's going to be your day that you get to see them. Sometimes they're even right on the hillside outside the visitor center front doors.
Suzanne, as we're recording this, it is a weekday afternoon coming on to evening. Can you give us an idea of what you're seeing or what you saw as you were moving from the visitor center to your house this afternoon?
This forest of the Chiricahua Mountains is a very crazy, mixed up combination of oak and pine trees from the Rocky Mountains, with many species from Mexico, Sierra Madre Mountains. And then to make it even more exciting, we have yuccas and agaves and cactus from both the Sonoran deserts to the southwest and the Chihuahuan deserts to the southeast. And even though it's spring, the oak trees are changing color because that's their adaptation to this environment. They keep their leaves over winter and then change color and drop them in spring.
Turning 100 is a big deal, and you beat us by a year. We turn 100 next year. So clearly there's some celebrations happening this month. Is there something you can tell our listeners about?
Yes. In fact, the anniversary date of April 18th, we will have a program at Faraway Ranch with a special talks about the history of the monument and what perhaps the future might bring, along with the required cake and lemonade too, of course. And then on Friday, the 19th, we're trying something different. From 1 o'clock to 4 o'clock in the afternoon, visitors will be able to wander around the historic Faraway Ranch grounds and will encounter staff people dressed in 1920s and 30s clothing, prepared to talk about what life was like in that 100 years ago here in Bonita Canyon, whether you were a cowboy working at Faraway Ranch or maybe one of the guests who had come from back east to get a taste of the West. And then Saturday morning up at Masai Point, I'll be doing geology talks and sharing more of the details of the story behind the scenery with the dramatic volcanic eruption on the hour at 11, 12, 1, 2, and 3.
My last question for you is, there's been discussion in Congress to potentially make Chiricahua a national park as opposed to a national monument. Don't know if that would ever actually happen, but from your perspective, how do you think that would change the experience there?
That's a great question, because visitors often ask about that too. You know, there's pros and cons for both. Right now, as a national monument, we average maybe 55 to 65,000 people visiting per year, not only across the United States, but from anywhere almost in the world as well. It's a small area. And with an aging infrastructure, like so many of our National Park Service sites have, as far as water and sewer, and just a tiny campground of only 25 sites, if those pieces of legislation do get passed as a national park, perhaps the goal of the people campaigning to make that happen is to draw more people to Southern Arizona. And I definitely agree more people should see this place, but I would question whether the area would lose some of the magic if you're trying to fight for a parking space or not getting a campsite. So it's that kind of mixed opportunity, because becoming a national park does not automatically mean that there would be an increase in the budget or an increase in staffing either, or at least not right away.
That is Park Ranger Interpretation Suzanne Moody joining us to talk about her experiences and a century at Chiricahua National Monument. Suzanne, so much fun for us to talk with you. Thanks.
You're very welcome. It was a pleasure. I invite everyone to come visit.
Great conversation with Park Ranger Suzanne Moody. But at the very end of our conversation, you mentioned how you'd been to Chiricahua, I don't know if it was estimated 20 times or not. Mm-hmm. So you're really good at painting a picture. What stands out to you about all the visits you've had there?
It really is a park where you feel like you have it all to yourself. I mean, there's infrastructure there. There's a great visitor center and there's a paved road that, you know, goes all the way through the park and, you know, gets up to the lookout at the end. So it's very accessible, but for some reason it's, you know, not on the radar screen of a lot of people. And, you know, for me, you know, my first love is hiking, and, you know, to be able to hike into those hoodoos, mm-hmm. As we talked about, and be among those rocks and, you know, whatever they might be named doesn't matter. It's just the fact that you're in this place that was carved over, you know, so many hundreds of thousands of years, whatever it is. And it's the solitude that I feel when I'm there, I think, that stands out. I mean, there are a lot of places in Arizona that have spectacular scenery surrounding you, but you don't always get that solitude.
Do you have favorites? Do you try to not do the same pattern every time you go?
Yeah, you know, I mean, you know, as Suzanne mentioned, there's only 17 miles of hiking trails in there. But, you know, it's like, you know, hiking into the Grand Canyon. I mean, it feels different every time you're there. I mean, I've hiked the Bright Angel Trail. I can't begin to even guess how many times, but it never gets old, that's for sure. And, you know, if you're lucky enough to stumble upon a ranger like Suzanne who can sort of tell you some of the backstories about that place, I think it would be a great opportunity to take advantage of that.
Let me ask you about the cover photo. This is remarkable. And I'm just curious, I always ask you some of the Inside Magazine stuff, but when you're talking about a place that looks like Chiricahua, how difficult was it to pick this particular one? Why did you pick it?
That is a great question. And we did debate this one for quite a while because, you know, because it's such a scenic place, it may not draw a lot of traditional visitors, but it draws a lot of photographers. And the light is down there. And as Suzanne mentioned, the weather changes all the time down there. And so you've got all these great opportunities as a photographer. And, you know, there's a lot of views that we've seen, sort of the, you know, high view looking down at the hoodoos and sort of the broader landscape. We loved the light in this photograph, and the perspective was something fresh and we hadn't seen it before.
You're working like crazy on this 100th anniversary of Highways coming up. But as you mentioned, and as the cover indicates, it's 100 years of the Chiricahua National Monument. You know, there are some people in our business who like, oh, anniversaries, yawn. But this one is obviously contrary to that. But how exciting is it to celebrate something like this and be able to look into the history, which you're very good at, and then bring it up to date and really remind people? Because anniversaries are a great way to remind people of how great some of the things are out there.
Well, you know, we love doing these issues. And for our listeners who aren't familiar, 100 years is pretty old for a park. There aren't many national monuments that are that old. Obviously, Yellowstone goes back further, and Grand Canyon became a national park in 1919. So, you know, it's pretty old compared to a lot of places. But, you know, for us, it's a rediscovery. And I know you and I have talked about it over the years, Steve. It's, you know, for Arizona Highways, having been around as long as we have, you know, we look for counterintuitive ways to tell a lot of the same stories and cover some of the same ground. And, you know, what's great about that is you do find things that you didn't know before. And, you know, putting this issue together, because we dedicated the whole issue to this subject because it is so noteworthy, it gave us the space to tell some of those other stories.
And that's all for this April 2024 edition of the Arizona Highways Podcast. We've been talking about the April 2024 issue, the cover story, Chiricahua, a treasured national monument, turns 100, amazing photos in the magazine, and some great history as well. To find previous episodes of the Arizona Highways Podcast, you can actually just Google us, Arizona Highways Podcast, or Go to Apple, Spotify, any place you get your podcasts, and please find it there. We'll also ask you to subscribe, rate, and review. For the editor of Arizona Highways Magazine, Robert Steve, I'm Steve Goldstein. Thanks so much for listening to the Arizona Highways Podcast.